Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're going to talk right now with Bill Gertz, who is senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, Inside the Ring columnist at the Washington Times, and author of IWAR, War and Peace in the Information Age. I can get that on Amazon, correct, Bill?
Yes.
Well, do then, because that's going to be some good stuff. Bill, I wanted to talk to you. You've got a piece that came out with what seems to me to be the graveyard all of us are whistling past, the potential for cyber attacks on us from either the Chinese or Russians. Tell us about the report and what that portends for our security.
Yeah, this was a piece in the Washington Free Beacon this morning based on a recently released Defense Science Board study on cyber deterrence. And it had some alarming facts in it. The major one, which is that for at least the next 10 years, our critical infrastructure, the most critical of which is our electrical grid, will be vulnerable to a catastrophic cyber attack from Russia or China for the next 10 years. In other words, we're way behind the curve in hardening and strengthening our defenses against advanced cyber attack from states like Russia and China. I was really surprised. And the other element of this report, it was a 44-page report. The Defense Science Board is a support element of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition. It shows that we really aren't prepared for this in terms of defense strategy. In other words, if we are attacked in our infrastructure, the military likely also would be attacked in cyber ways that would limit its ability to operate. Basically, cyber attacks against our military infrastructure would prevent the military from taking the needed steps to help protect the country. So it really shows that our country is vulnerable and is going to be vulnerable for a quite long period of time. And that's truly alarming to me.
I would ask, did they seem to think that there was some outside limit at 10 years? Because I'm unaware of any legitimate abilities we have or programs we have that are going to guarantee this changes. I don't think we've placed, you know, the proper emphasis on this, the proper recognition of the threat you've just outlined, let alone countermeasures or prevention, mitigation, or making the grid itself resilient enough, you know, to recover from an attack like that. Do they have an idea that we're planning to fix this?
According to the report, steps are being taken to harden the grid and other infrastructures. That said, the threat is becoming more advanced faster than we're going to be able to do that. The context for this threat was that it was calling for a new element of cyber deterrence. And it said that the past cyber deterrence under the Obama administration was not effective. Basically, deterrence by defense, by saying, if you attack us, well, we'll just strengthen our defenses. And it called for a much more robust cyber deterrence, calling for holding foreign leaders accountable. In other words, it would be launching cyber attacks or perhaps even military attacks on foreign leaders if they are involved in cyber attacks on our critical infrastructure.
So, I mean, our best answer then is mutually assured cyber destruction at this point?
Well, at least for 10 years, I think that's what the report was saying. They urgently need to step up our game in the cyber warfare area. I agree. And that was a key point in my book, IWAR, that we are way behind the curve in developing these urgently needed capabilities.
Yeah, you can watch it in the consumer world, you know, that the hackers are always one step ahead and then they deploy countermeasures based on what the hackers have done. So, you know, unless you actually get to the point where you do two things, number one, you have to deploy the resources and spend the time and energy to go ahead and get ahead of them. But then you also have to make certain that if any state wants to sponsor something like this, they know that the pain they're going to feel for doing it far outweighs the damage they could do to us. So let's hope they're listening. And again, go ahead and get Bill's book, IWAR, War and Peace in the Information Age. Definitely needed advice there. Bill, there's a couple other interesting things going on. And I say interesting in the scaring me and making all of us a little nervous. There's another piece you wrote talking about how the opposition leader in Russia thinks Trump could help them drive Putin from power. Is he playing internal politics there, or does he have some idea that this might be in Trump's or our best interest?
Yeah, this was another important story that ran in both the Free Beacon and the Washington Times, and it was an exclusive interview that I did with a Russian opposition figure. His name is Mikhail Khodorkovsky, and He is a former oligarch leader of the Yukos oil thing who was imprisoned for 10 years by Putin and has now become one of the leading democracy advocates in Russia. He has a movement called Open Russia. And his theory is that Trump has a unique opportunity to help convince Putin that it's in his best interest that he'll never get a better deal from another American administration in leaving power at this time and helping Russia get back on the path of democracy. He's a serious guy. I think he's not somebody who's pie in the sky, but I think it's an important thing that should be looked at. He was hoping to meet with President Trump and or at least some of his White House advisors, but a lot of the people involved in Russia affairs are not in place yet. But I was pretty impressed by him, and I think he makes a good case that we definitely need a program to get rid of Putin. Again, this was one of the recommendations in my book, iWar, that we launch a information warfare campaign that would drive Putin from power and put the country back on a path to democracy.
Okay, now that's a pretty interesting idea. I'm always a fan of trying to push things towards a better resolution, even if it's slightly dangerous in the short term. But would this involve trying to convince Putin there's a buyout of some sort, or what's the reason, other than being forced from power by internal Russian pressure, what's the reason for Putin to walk away from any of this? I mean, he's prone to cheating the system.
He made the point that Putin has been in power for 18 years. And that Russia is on the verge of collapse, despite what we may have heard in the press, certainly in the Russian media. The country is facing a crisis, and it's a lot weaker than it looks because they've been using propaganda means. And he believes that Trump is the first president in 20 years and probably will be the last for the next 20 years who is ready to question the international order set up at Yalta at the end of World War II. And for that reason, he thinks that Trump is a good negotiator and can negotiate with Putin that, hey, Vladimir, it's time to step down. And, of course, I mentioned to him, I said, well, what about exposing Putin's hidden wealth? And he said, really, what difference does it make whether we uncover the fact that he has $45 billion that he's stolen from Russian industry or whether it's $20 billion? He said one way that we could leverage him would be to give him access to that money and essentially buy him out.
Well, that's an interesting idea, and that would be big game politics. I mean, Trump has questioned NATO. He's questioned the relationships with China and everything else. He's not afraid to upset the apple cart, so that would be interesting to see. Bill, more of your good work talking about the Chinese and their issues with the United States deploying missile defense systems to South Korea after, you know, the North Koreans have amped up their lobbing of missiles towards Japan. It always shocks me when people are complaining that we deployed a missile defense system, as if that somehow is an aggressive act. What's their actual beef?
Yeah, this is a story that I've followed for the last 3 years. It was 3 years ago that the commander of U.S. Forces Korea, at the time General Scaparotti, urgently requested the deployment of this highly effective Army ground-based missile defense system called THAAD. And he wanted it because of the growing missile threat from North Korea. Well, that launched the Chinese into a major propaganda and influence operation, kind of international bullying against the South Koreans with all kinds of threats and offers of lucrative trade to not deploy the missile system, the missile defense system, because the Chinese feel that it's going to impact their large offensive missile forces. So finally, after all of these North Korean tests, the South Koreans finally submitted to it, and now we've got the first deployment of this new system. The Chinese reaction, they've threatened an arms race. I think, hey, let's use missile defenses all around China. Let's deploy some in Taiwan. Let's deploy some in Thailand. Let's deploy some in India or Mongolia. And if the Chinese don't like it, too bad. These are defensive systems against their missiles.
Well, like I said, I never have understood the idea that deploying defensive systems is an aggressive act, but in the end, I think saber-rattling is a game that everybody plays. Bill Gertz, senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, inside the ring columnist, the Washington Times, thank you so much for joining us. Up next, we will be talking with Louise Fleischman. This is Jim Hansen, and you're listening to Secure Freedom Radio.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.